With the 37 keys of Tzeentch, we open the way for our brothers. With the 1,000 whispers of Slaanesh, we call to them. With the 12 plagues of Nurgle, we fell their enemies. And with the mighty axe of Khorne, we cut open the world for them.
Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Wednesday, July 17th, 2019. A little slight delay this week, just due to some stuff I had to get done around on the home front. And admittedly, it was just kind of sick. Not like crazy amounts, but just, you know, congestion, all that, basically all the crap that you don't want to have when you're doing a podcast or any other form of, like, speaking. Even now, I still feel a little a little hoarse and a little congested, but yeah. It just was, like, bad timing there and stuff. I just got it over the weekend, like, Sunday, I think I started in on it, so. But finally almost over it, I think, hopefully. Got some other crap I gotta get done, so fingers crossed. So, yeah, this is episode 49. This is 2 days before the one-year anniversary of the Regimental Vox. So, yeah, not a whole lot going on right now specifically. There may or may not be some big changes coming up for the podcast. Kind of dependent on some life stuff, maybe good, maybe bad, we'll see. I will keep you guys posted as things happen. But yeah, otherwise on the home front, it's been, like I said, I was sick. Did manage to play some Age of Sigmar over the weekend, actually, a 2,000 point match between Krista and I, and we'll go over that a little bit later on in the episode on the specifics of the gameplay there. And then, yeah, beyond that, not a whole lot. You know, like I said, been sick. Missed a little work, actually, in the past week just due to some family stuff, including last night. Missed some work. So, and probably going to be, well, shouldn't say probably. I am going to be missing some more work next week, too, unfortunately, just due to some other personal business that I got to take care of. But we won't go into all the details and all that boring jazzaroo. Let's get into the fun stuff here. This week, not a whole lot on the 40K front. A lot more on the Age of Sigmar fantasy worlds front. Namely, in that Warcry is coming up, and they've announced more details on it. So, but we'll cover that here in a moment. I did want to mention that there was some 40K news right after I finished recording last week. I don't think, at least from what I recall, I don't think this was out before I finished my recording last week. But they did show off some more of these, Adeptus Sororitas, the Sisters of Battle models. Showed off a few more of the computer models, as well as a finalized and painted actual production model. So, pretty cool shit. If you haven't checked them out yet, they're really awesome models. So, definitely take a look at those. Let's see here. They also announced that they were going to be doing a version of Warhammer Underworlds for a younger crowd and stuff. More simplistic rules and things of that nature. Just to help you kind of get, people, namely younger children. It would probably be good for people who are just, not used to gaming as a whole, and that just need, like, a really easy starter sort of rule set. So, but still, this is pretty cool, I think. It will go far towards helping introduce young hobbyists into the hobby. So, let's see here. And then we've got some new stuff from the Black Library, actually. They have some new books coming out and stuff. They do have the paperback version of the second Herusian Wars book, Incarnation, coming out. I personally have a mixed feeling on that series. It's interesting because I like the Agents of the Throne audio dramas. I really, really like those, and those are based in the same setting with the same characters and stuff, but just like more of a more specifically on a specific agent under the Inquisitor's command. But yeah, they're just, I don't know. They just don't come across, those books, the Herusian War books, just aren't as whiz-bang to me. But still, worth checking out. Beyond that, re-releasing the Ravener Omnibus, which is cool. If you haven't gotten a chance to check that out before, I definitely recommend it. Although I definitely would highly recommend you check out Eisenhorn first. It's better, but B, more of the stories will make sense in Ravener after you've read Eisenhorn. So definitely make sure to give that a spin firstly. So, and then beyond that, once again, there's not a whole lot. It's mainly focused on Warcry. So this week's rumor engine was kind of interesting. If you haven't checked it out yet, it kind of looks reminiscent of a Tau like head, like of a battle suit. But that being said, it also to me kind of looks like a sensor cluster for an Adeptus Mechanicus like vehicle or backpack or something like that. So it's kind of hard to say. I would say it's probably one of these two, you know, either the Tau stuff or AdMech. I don't think it'll be anything other than one of those two things, but who knows, maybe we'll be surprised and see something else different. So but yeah, beyond that, you know, not a whole hell of a lot else in the past week. They did have the ATC this past week, and there was some pretty cool streams over the weekend that you could watch it. It was kind of like a first time that they were doing like a major professional stream for the ATC, and while there's been other streamers and stuff like that for various tournaments, a lot of them are usually pretty basic sort of stuff. I will say an exception being the Honest Wargamer when they covered the British Open earlier this year. It was supremely professionally well done. I highly recommend if you get an opportunity to look that up online and kind of find those videos. They did a very, very outstanding job with it. And that's the fascinating thing, actually, to me. So, over this weekend, with the ATC thing, they had a professional team come in. Guys who had done, like, coverage for, you know, like, esports stuff. Like, you know, Overwatch and shit like that. And so, the idea was, alright, we're gonna have this professional company come in. And these guys with all the know-how, the equipment, the knowledge, etc. And we're going to put out a supreme quality item. And it was really good. It definitely had some hiccups, though. And I'm not trying to criticize it. I just find it interesting that a handful of guys who, you know, don't entirely know what they're doing with streaming and stuff like that put out a extremely high-quality product earlier this year through the Honest Wargamer there. But then these guys who are supposedly, you know, a company that's focused purely on esports stuff, and that's kind of their shtick, didn't do as high. Namely, there was a lot of just, you know, issues with the presentation itself. They had technical issues on Friday nights. So they didn't get to do the preview stream. And then, you know, they would have random, just bad choices and stuff. The name one being, I was watching a game that was getting super heated, and they were like, there was going to be some serious action going down between some Imperial Knights and Chaos stuff. And there was this big build-up. They had to call over a judge to make sure that a proper call was being made. I definitely don't think anybody was trying. Nobody really seemed like they were cheating, but there was one guy who was definitely very much focused on performing as many shenanigans as he possibly could. For example, trying to count his Lord Discordant as, you know, the base is on the ground, because the corner of it was on the ground. The rest of it, it was basically on like a 60-degree angle with the edge of the base touching the ground and then the rest of the base going up the side of this ruin and stuff. It was kind of crap. He was trying to be like, well, it's like the way a hill would work. But no, it's not. You know it. And then even after the judge was like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. He's like, well, you got to try. So he knew he was trying to pull some shitty shenanigans, but he tried anyway. But whatever. Admittedly, too, that guy, he was definitely big on the gotchas. His opponent had used a stratagem to give him... I don't even remember what the stratagem was. I just know that it was like on a hit roll of six. Oh, I think it was like exploding dice on a hit roll of six. I forget the name of the stratagem. It was for an Imperial Knight. And it's like does like three hits instead of one when you roll a six in combat against chaos stuff. And the guy was like, yeah, I'm going to use this stratagem. And the other guy was like, okay, well, yeah, you know, you sure, you know, you're going to. He's like, okay, well, if you're going to do that, we're going to do all this other crap. And then once again, the shenanigans thing and stuff. But then he was like, okay, so you're sure you're doing that stratagem? And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm gonna use that stratagem. And he's like, okay. So he spends that CP. When the moment the guy goes to roll the dice finally, because they had, once again, all this judge involvement and crap. The moment he goes to start picking up dice, the other guy goes, oh, and remember, you're negative one to hit, so that stratagem doesn't work. So... he knew full well, and obviously he doesn't have to coach his opponent and be like, well, just so you know, yeah, I wouldn't recommend spending that CP because you're going to be negative one to hit, and so it's going to be a waste of CP. All he would have had to say when the guy was like, you know, hey, I'm going to use my stratagem to give me the exploding sixes, the other guy could have just said, okay, cool, you know, just remember I'm negative one to hit, and left it at that. That gives enough information that if the guy spending the stratagem, the CP can't, do the math and go, oh, wait a second, I don't want to use that then that's on him. You know, he doesn't have to be coached into it, but just a nice friendly reminder of, hey, just so you know, I'm negative one to hit. Just to avoid those gotcha moments and shit, that really was just not cool. So, but the big thing... overall, oh, and as a side note, too, that's not how that stratagem works, to my understanding. I read it in the Imperial Knights Codex. It would have exploded anyways. It's natural sixes. It doesn't matter what their modifies are. So, the other thing, though, that was frustrating specifically with the whole stream, and it applied directly to that that match, and some other times, too, was they would interview players who had finished their games that were on the bigger tables. They covered five tables at a time, namely the top tables. But they would go to interview somebody, and in this case, like literally the guy's about to roll a dice and about to finally, after this big buildup towards this, probably game-altering combat, he goes to pick up the dice, goes to start rolling, and just before he starts rolling the shit, it cuts away to the interview, so you don't get to see or hear the game at all. They do the interview and everything. So it was just kind of like, why would you time it that way sort of stuff. The next day they did start doing kind of like picture-in-picture with the interviews where they would be in the lower corner instead so that you could still watch the game and also, if you wanted to, pay attention to that interview. So they were learning and figuring stuff out. And so once again, I'm not necessarily criticizing them like it was a garbage stream. It was quite high quality. But between like weird things like that, like you wouldn't do that if you were covering an eSport game and there was going to be a really big piece of the action about to happen. You wouldn't cut away to an interview just before the thing everyone was waiting for happens. So, it's just weird. Beyond that, though, they had some problems. Just, they would go to select a scorecard or whatever for the overlay, and it would pull up the wrong card, or stuff would be out of date, or whatever. They were trying to stay on top of it. They actually had an iPad at each table that was being streamed, where the players could actually just, press a button on the screen, to take away CP, to show off that they completed objectives, whatever. And that let them, you know, kind of keep a running live tally. But once again, they kept selecting wrong tables or whatever else. So, I mean, once again, not saying it was total garbage by any stretch. But sometimes they had audio imbalances where the action or an interview was super quiet while they had really loud music playing over top of it. And just a lot of weird things that you wouldn't expect from a professional company. So I definitely hope they continue on, though. I definitely am not saying all this as a, well, they should just give it up. Don't do that. Because it was, like I said, it was still at the end of the day way better than a lot of other productions. It's just, I guess the best way of putting it is that while it was more ambitious than other productions had accomplished less stuff but very well polished. Or in the case of, once again, the Honest Wargaming stream, it was pretty much the same quality, but, you know, without all the trip-ups and stuff from what I watched. So, overall, like I said, it's hopefully a step in the right direction for the future of the community and of game coverage. So, but, anywho, let's get into a little bit on Warcry here, actually. If you've been listening to the podcast, I've been following Warcry for a bit, and now that it's finally here almost, I am definitely intrigued to try it out. They did show off in the past week, they showed off two more factions in the warbands. And then they announced some interesting new side notes for Warband stuff, too. But yeah, they announced the Unmade and the Cypher Lords. They have recently announced that there are two more Warbands being released, at minimum, two more. Scions of the Flame and Spire Tyrants, but we don't have any details on those. And they also announced that you're going to be able to use select factions in Warcry already. They added in Stormcast Eternals, Daughters of Cain, Idoneth Deepkin, Nighthaunt, Iron Jaws, Gloomspite Gith, Legions of Nagash, Flesh Eater Courts, and Bone Splitters. Some of those seem like pretty obvious choices. Some of them are just kind of weird, like Bone Splitters. I don't hear a whole lot of people having Bone Splitters stuff, so I thought that was kind of strange. But whatever. Overall, and I found it interesting too, that there are no extra chaos factions through this addition of like the previous faction stuff. But yeah, if you want to play a faction from AOS in Warcry, you just got to pick up like a card deck, to my understanding, and there you go. That'll give you all the stuff you need to know in order to use your faction. But yeah, but otherwise there are the six warbands. The box set includes the Iron Golems and the Untamed Beasts. And then the other four are going to be sold separately. I'm hoping they're all available at launch, because personally, I do want to try out Warcry, but I really want to get the Corvus Cabal specifically. So, that being said, you know, we've kind of covered before the other factions as they announced them. The two new ones, the Unmade and the Cypher Lords. This is the one thing that I'm still concerned about with Warcry overall, is that the factions, just most of the factions, in my opinion, do not look all that great. They don't look terrible in some ways. They don't fit what I would envision. You know, that when it comes to all these barbarians and marauders that are all looking to garner the favor of the chaos gods. And some of them just look plain weird. So, like, the Cypher Lords, kind of like this Zinchian acolyte cultist appearance. It shows. They got, like, weird headdresses. It's kind of like this, you know, pseudo-Egyptian aesthetic and stuff to it. So I can definitely see that influence and whatnot. But they're just kind of just plain looking. They just kind of look like people wearing strange headdresses. On the other hand, the Unmade, which are supposed to be dudes from like the realm of death. Rather strange. Some of them are kind of cool looking. All of them wear a like a chaos star sort of thing that actually has their actual face mounted to it. Like they've peeled their face off and then they wear their face as a trophy on their belt, which is kind of a cool thing. But that being said, the main leader dude of that warband looks fucking stupid. Like, it does not look good. It looks really bad, in my opinion. Some people might like it, and if you like it, cool. You know what? That's your totally your prerogative. That's totally your thing. You go for it, you know? But otherwise, it just looks like a weird motherfucking, you know, like if you've ever seen the memes with like the people dancing wearing the mannequin head, it's exactly what it looks like. I could not take it seriously at all. And I think that's part of the problem with the Warcry warbands for the most part is they don't feel that, they don't have that grim, dark feel. Now I know Age of Sigmar as a whole is not the grim darkness of the 41st millennium by any stretch. But it's definitely garnered more of that aesthetic over time. And a lot of these just feel like a step away from that. And considering that it's a game totally focused on, you know, marauders, you know, murdering each other for the favor of the dark gods and of Archaon, it just seems weird. So, now, that being said, the Warcry box set looks pretty fucking killer. I don't have a price in front of me, but depending on the price, it might be worth picking up just for the terrain alone. There seems to be a pretty good amount of terrain included, which I could definitely use some of that around here. But yeah, beyond that, it's got a beefy number of models. You've got, let's see here, what looks like 8 iron golems and 9 of the untamed beasts characters. The untamed beasts, well, it's 8 untamed beast characters and then one like creature that follows them around and shit. But then there's some extra creatures included too. Beyond that, I don't know if they're neutral creatures, like stuff that but both players have to fend off against. But there's some pretty cool models. And that's the thing. Most of this stuff is actually pretty cool looking. There's just a few things here and there that are just kind of like, what? Namely, in the, you know, like I said, in the warbands themselves. So, now, once again, don't have specifics. We don't have the rules or anything like that. But it's definitely worth checking out. See if it's something that might interest you. It does include 3 ways to play the game. So there is open play. The open play mode actually includes like larger group skirmish battles, multiplayer battles, etc. There is matched play, which is for tournament combat. That's more like what we're probably used to seeing with like the kill team tournaments and stuff. And then there's narrative play. So as expected, you know, the 3 standard ones there. But yeah, overall, it's really cool looking. That's the thing. The game itself, even if some of the models are pretty hinky looking and stuff, like, but the game itself does sound and look pretty cool. In a lot of ways, kind of like AOS Kill Team. So, if you like Kill Team, might be worth checking out Warcry, whether you're into AOS stuff or not. So, beyond that, though, they are going to be releasing some terrain. They even have this thing, the Ravaged Lands Corpse Rack Mausoleum. Excuse me. Now, admittedly, I'm pretty certain this is just a repackaged... God, what was that terrain set called? The Gardens of Moor, I think. I'm pretty sure this is just a repackaged one of that. But still, terrain is terrain, and it's nice to have terrain. So... as Krista and I learned over the weekend when we were playing our AOS game. So, but I'm going to take a little break here. After the break, I'm going to talk about some information I found regarding the new Blood Ravens index. So stay tuned. You're listening to The Regimental Vox. Follow The Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/TheRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter at Regimental Vox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/TheRegimentalVox today. All right, welcome back, everybody. We're going to go ahead and talk about some of the new information that has been leaked regarding the Index Blood Ravens coming out of the new White Dwarf. There's not a whole ton, but there's some interesting stuff here, admittedly. So, it looks like overall they've got they don't have a new Warlord trait from what I can see. And they don't, it's not like the, like the Black Legion thing where it's a fully fleshed out, like, huge, all right, we're getting 6 unique Warlord traits and we're getting a bunch of relics and all this other jazz. It's a small amount of stuff, but still, it's interesting. So they don't, by the looks of it, they don't get a Warlord trait of their own, a unique one. They do have a chapter tactic, a stratagem, and a relic specific to them, as well as an extra unit. So, but we'll start with the chapter tactic, for starters, since that'll affect the most things. Now, I'm assuming, like with the other Space Marine chapter tactics, it's not going to affect vehicles and stuff. I don't know why, like, Space Marines don't get the ability to use their stuff on their vehicles when other factions like AdMech and stuff do. At least I haven't seen anything in the AdMech Codex that says I can't. Otherwise, I've been playing the game very, very wrong. But there's this tactic is pretty interesting. So the tactic is called Relentless Seekers. The Blood Ravens unwaveringly seek out knowledge at all opportunities, and even the most punishing assaults cannot hold them at bay. Their chapter librarians are meticulous in this collection, for hopefully this may lead them to some secret about their chapter's mysterious past. So a lot of people joke that they maybe be able to steal other people's relics, blah, blah, blah. And no, you can't do that. But this is a pretty interesting tactic. It's got 2 parts to it. I'll start off with what I consider they're both interesting, but I'll start off with what I consider the lesser one part of the two. When a psychic test or deny the witch test is taken for a psyker model with this tactic, reroll any or all dice rolls of 1. If you roll, it improves your odds of getting the dice rolls you want, being able to reroll, you're rolling 2 dice typically, you reroll any ones that you get, so it can help you avoid perils by accidentally, double 1. It can help you increase your odds of denying the enemy or, casting your own psychic powers, etc. Very powerful, which makes it interesting because, like I said, I feel like it's the lesser of the two. The other one is when resolving an attack made against a unit with this tactic, an unmodified wound roll of a 1 or 2 always fails, irrespective of any abilities that the weapon or the model making that attack may have. So most of your stuff is toughness 4 at minimum anyway, so someone's got to hit you with a strength 8 weapon typically, unless they have some sort of modifier or whatever else to increase it to, 2 being the roll. Being able to say, well, you rolled a 2, so too bad. These guys are going to be far more durable than any other Space Marine chapter, in my opinion. It basically means the enemy is going to primarily want to focus on, using weapons that aren't going to be worrying about the 2s in the first place and stuff. Because otherwise, it's wasting that potential power of his weaponry. So, once again, though, obviously it's not going to affect vehicles, though you're probably not going to be using a vehicle, being hit by a weapon on your vehicle that does damage on it, or, wounds you on a 2. So, but still, pretty powerful. And then they got the Stratagem Chief Librarian for 1 CP. As masters of the psychic arts, the Chief Librarians of the Blood Ravens could direct the energies of the Immaterium with incredible precision and power. Use this stratagem before the battle. Select 1 Blood Ravens Librarian from your army. That model gains the Chief Librarian keyword and knows the following ability. Chief Librarian. This model knows one additional power from their chosen discipline and can attempt to deny one additional psychic power in your opponent's psychic phase. You can only use this stratagem once per battle. So if you're really looking to play the psychic game, that's the thing. Between the tactic and the stratagem, Blood Ravens are definitely very focused on the psychic game in comparison to other Space Marine chapters. So if you're not really big into psychers, you're not going to get as much bang for your buck out of the Blood Ravens. But there's still some potential with like that whole ignoring wounds on a 2 even. So, and then Relics, they have Purgatorius. It's a bolt pistol. Bolt pistol or heavy bolt pistol. It replaces that and has the following profile. 12-inch range, pistol 2, strength 5, AP neg 3, 2 damage. So, definitely a very powerful pistol. Whether you want to use your free relic on that or not, a lot of weapons aren't typically worth the bonus. In particular, you're going to fire this thing 6 times. And, 6 times tops, so 12 shots total throughout the entire game. Whether that's worth it to you or not is hard to say. At a 12-inch range in particular, you're probably not going to be using it all that often. So it's a very powerful bolt pistol, don't get me wrong. I definitely am not saying it's not powerful. It's actually ridiculously powerful, but it's whether it's worth it or not versus using another relic is another question. Beyond that, they added in the chapter master Gabriel Angelos. He's 185 points and uses the Rites of War warlord trait. Now, to my understanding, the only way to get Gabriel Angelos is through Forge World. If I recall correctly, I'm pretty certain. I mean, maybe they're going to release a plastic version of them or something as part of the anniversary and whatnot, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's not the case. So, what's interesting about him overall is that he is in Terminator armor, but he has a 6-inch move. So he's got a 2-up save, but a 6-inch move. He's just equipped with God Splitter, his Relic Thunderhammer. So you have 2 choices when using it. You can use it as Mighty Strikes. It's strength times 2. His base strength is 4, so strength 8 then. AP neg 3, 3 damage. And he gets 5 attacks a turn, so he can do up to 15 damage with this thing. When resolving an attack with this profile, subtract 1 from the hit roll, so he hits on 3s instead of 2s. And a wound roll of 6+ inflicts 1 mortal wound on the target in addition to any other damage. So you can actually do more than 15 wounds. It's pretty potent stuff there. And then you have sweeping blows. Strength plus 2, AP neg 1, damage 1. And then basically when you use that, it adds 3 to your attacks characters until the end of the phase. So 8 attacks instead of 5. So definitely pretty potent there too. At the plus 2 strength, you're looking at hitting enemies with a strength 6, 8 attacks with neg 1 AP, 1 damage. So good if you're looking to clear out some infantry. Not great for a whole lot of else. Maybe some light vehicle hunting if it's really necessary, but I don't think you're going to get much more use out of it beyond that. And then he has some of the typical stuff, and they shall know no fear. He has a 4-up invulnerable save with his Iron Halo. The Chapter Master rule, reroll hit rolls for attacks made by friendly models and Blood Ravens units, whilst their units within 6 inches of the model. And then he's got Teleport Strike as well. The interesting thing he has is Leap into the Fray. After this model finishes a charge move, you can select one enemy unit within 1 inch of it and roll 1d6. On a 4-up, the enemy unit suffers d3 mortal wounds. So you can do yet more damage with him. So he's got toughness 4, 6 wounds. He's a pretty beastly little dude. I don't know if he's super crazy useful, but if you're looking to get super fluffy with your Blood Ravens, there you go. So definitely interested to see if there's anything more than that. I've not heard of anything more beyond that, so we'll see. But it definitely looks like it'll be fun to mess around with a little bit. Namely, the chapter tactics and stuff. The chapter tactics, that stratagem, if you're building a psyker-heavy force, definitely has some perks. The relic is pretty underwhelming. Once again, a very powerful built pistol, and that's awesome. But its usefulness, I feel like, is going to be rather limiting in comparison. If you're shooting at a character target specifically, you want to make sure it goes down. Sure, go for it. But otherwise, in general, it's not going to probably, you know, change your gaming by having it there. And then Gabriel Angelos being totally only available for melee combat. And yeah, he's got the 6-inch move, but he doesn't fly. So he has some potential as a Smash Captain-y type dude, but he's not quite there in my opinion. So, but yeah, still pretty cool stuff. So, but yeah, beyond that, there's not much else information we have with those. Once again, there might be more, there might not. We'll just have to wait and see. So, but yeah, now that we've covered that, take one more small little break, a little transition there, and jump into talking about some experiences that we had playing some Age of Sigmar over the weekend. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Regimental Vox. Follow The Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/TheRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter at Regimental Vox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/TheRegimentalVox today. Hey everybody, welcome back to the back end of the show here. Gonna be talking about my game experiences over the weekend playing some Age of Sigmar. So it's actually been a bit since we had played AOS in any capacity, and I had a bunch of new stuff that I hadn't tried out. She finally built up her Lady Olander, so we got to it. We played a 2,000 point match, and we just rolled off out of the new general's handbook to figure out map deployment and stuff. Wasn't quite regulation size table because we still haven't set up our gaming table, although we're going to probably actually be doing that soon. She mentioned to me a perfect idea about it today that I was like, holy crap, I don't know why I didn't think about that all along. But basically, if we set it up in the basement, then whenever we, you know, if we need to stop, we run out of time or whatever else, we can just make a note of where we left off. And hi, Carl, my cat is meowing at me. We can just make a note of where we left off and walk away from it. You know, it's down in the basement. The cat doesn't go down there. Kids don't go down there. Nobody else uses the space, etc. So we don't have to worry about, you know, shit getting in the way in any capacity. So, overall, I don't know why it never occurred to me, but yeah, this is going to open up some potential to game a lot more often, actually. So, but anywho, so we ended up playing, I think it was Escalation was the name of it. Basically, the map's divided into two triangles, and then you've got three objectives down the, you know, right down the line of the middle of the field, going from corner to corner. And the two outer objectives are 12 inches from the corner along that line, and then the center objective's in the center of the field. And then with the way it was, your deployment, battle line units could be up to 9 inches away from enemy territory. Behemoths and artillery, neither of us had anything tagged as behemoth or artillery, but those things would be 24 inches or more away from that middle line, and everything else had to be at least 18 inches. So we went ahead, set up deployment and stuff. We both brought a lot of our toys. She brought Lady O. She used the Condemned, the Chain Guard? I think it was the Chain Guard. Pretty sure it was the Chain Guard is the name of the battalion that she used. That lets her do an extra D6 on her Spectral Lure so she can bring more dudes back. She had Lady O, all sorts of extra Night Haunt goodies. And then with my Magikin, I had my Lord of Blights, Harbinger of Decay, Rodigus, Plague Drones, Nurglings, all sorts of goodies. So The game started off and it was pretty interesting. She had over twice as many models as me on the field. So I was a little nervous, like, damn, I'm going to get swamped. And in some ways I did. My group of 20 plague bearers, by the time the game ended, was down to four. But that being said, by the time the game ended, I mean, she had two blocks of chain grasps that were 30 apiece. Lady O, the Knight of Shrouds, Lord Executioner, the Guardian of Souls, a big block of Miramor Banshees, some Grimghast Reapers, Spirit Torment, and some Chain Ghasts. So she had a lot of stuff. But by the end of the game, she almost had nothing left on the field. And that was on turn three, I believe it was. What we both learned playing it, we did play without any terrain. Now, at first I was like, well, that makes sense. You know, like, it's not going to be a big deal. Because unlike 40K, where you're worried about blocking line of sight so you don't get shot at and stuff, there's not as much of that in Age of Sigmar. That being said, there was a little bit. I had a tiny bit of shooting, not super long range, and then some psychic powers and stuff that required line of sight. But overall, not a huge, you know, thing to worry about in those regards. What did make a difference, though, was because of the fact that if we had terrain, she has an entire army that can fly. Mine, only a couple small parts of it can fly. And therefore, I was able to move across the battlefield. Since we had no terrain, we both just moved pretty much equally across the battlefield as we saw fit. Whereas if we had had terrain, I would have had to maneuver around it and through it, whereas she just would fly right over it and not give a fuck. So, overall, after we played it out, there were a few interesting things we found. So, on my end, I personally discovered that I've been barking up the wrong tree with trying to go demons focused at first with my army list. My plague drones definitely helped, but they didn't put out a whole lot of hurt in any capacity, and they, you know, I lost a few of them and stuff. My plague bearers got, like, nearly annihilated, as I mentioned. Though there was a few small little perks here and there. But they managed to hold fairly well, all things considered, because they got swamped by all 60 of those chain rasps. But still, it was kind of like, oof. And then Rodigus soaked up some serious potential damage, and he just didn't give a shit, you know? She kept attacking him, and he's like, whatever, and just shrugged that shit off. But what was interesting is the whole game, Rodigus did not do a single wound. He did end up doing some with psychic powers, but in combat, he didn't do a single wound to anything. Despite the fact that he had some potential, he couldn't even hurt a chain rasp. It just wasn't happening. You know, for a maiden voyage, it was rather disappointing there to watch him, you know, charge into combat and do nothing for a couple turns. But his psychic power stuff was very, very helpful and useful. And then my Potspringer also, too, brought some psychic stuff to the field and did some... I'm saying psychic, it's magic because they're wizards. My bad, I'm getting that 40K and AOS stuff mixed up. But anyway, the point is that, you know, there was some good potential there. Now, the Nurglings, using the Hidden Infestation thing, I just dropped them at the end of my first turn. I dropped them on top of an objective, and they never got touched the rest of the game. So, definitely useful to do that drop-in feature and stuff with that ability. But then beyond that, man, Putrid Blight Kings with a Harbinger of Decay, whew, they do some fucking work. That Harbinger being able to give them all what's called Morbid Vigor, it's the same thing as Disgustingly Resilient. You roll a 5, ignore a wound. But, man, those Putrid Blight Kings, on a roll of 6 to hit, you do D6 hits instead. And I got some real nasty rolls with that. So on multiple occasions, I was, you know, hitting at least 1-6 and then rolling it and getting 4s, 5s, God, even one time, I managed to roll two guys got sixes on their attacks, and then I rolled the 2d, you know, so I rolled 2d6 and got boxcars. So I did 12 attacks with two hits. It is pretty fucking insane. Those guys mulched through her banshees and then the chain, or not the chain ghast, the grimghast reapers, spirit torment. They just did some major work. But yeah, like I said, overall, I definitely feel like I need to focus more on mortals and do less with the demons. So in the future, they just don't do the work, really. They just don't do enough for what I need them to do. So now, from talking to Krista and her experience with it, she definitely felt like she should have used the, I think it's called the Come from the Underworld or something like that. Basically, half of her army can go into like a deep strike type mode. She didn't use that at all, and it probably should have. They definitely could have done a lot more. Also, her Mirrorborn Banshees, while she's played some games where they really cooked, in this match, they folded like a wet paper bag, just they did nothing. They did not do any damage, and then they just got completely annihilated in the first attack that went against them. So, now, target priority might have been part of the problem there. Should have used them more to try and get up into the wizards and stuff like that. And instead, she ended up against two blocks of five Putrid Blight Kings. But still, the point is that it was pretty intense watching them just simply crash against this mountain of meat that is my Blight Kings and just, like I said, absolutely annihilated. So, overall, we likened the match in a lot of ways to a tsunami against a mountain. That, yeah, she has this huge wave of all these models and stuff, but the moment they crashed against my line, they just dissolved. Let's see here. I think, once again, my Plague Bearers, I think in the end I only have four left. So I lost like 16 Plague Bearers. I lost a couple Plague Drones, and each block of Putrid Blight Kings lost a Blight King. But that was it, you know. And then by the end of the match, she decided to call it because I was ahead 6-3 in points. And I think she had a couple of the Chain Ghasts left. And the Lord Executioner, and I feel like there was maybe some of the Reapers left, but that was about it. Other than that, she just got absolutely destroyed. Lady O, unfortunately, just like with Radagast, the maiden voyage was not, you know, Radagast survived, but he didn't do much except for survive. Lady O, on the other hand, just simply, before she even got an opportunity to really use her at all, she got absolutely annihilated. We both kind of agreed that maybe she kept her too safe in the back for too long. And so by the time she brought her forward, it was too little too late. She didn't have enough to defend Lady O anymore. Because I basically just surrounded her and then in one round of attacks just put her down. So, overall, though, we had a lot of fun. We definitely want to get some terrain. That's definitely a big thing that we both agreed is a necessity. You know, just overall, feel like in the case of my list, I'm pretty happy with what I got going. But I feel like, once again, I need more mortal stuff. Swap out more mortals, more mortal units for, you know, get rid of some of the demons in exchange. And we also both agree that with her list, she probably needs to take advantage more of that deep striking mechanism to really make that army shine. So, but yeah, that's about it this week. Obviously, once again, podcast turns, you know, is going to turn a year old here in a couple days. I will be off on Monday due to the, you know, once again, I have some personal business I got to take care of and stuff. So I will not be home on Monday, unfortunately. I will most likely just simply be doing an episode on Tuesday instead. And probably do that, or I might still even do an episode actually this week though on Friday for the, you know, for the Vox's birthday. Otherwise, the next episode, you know, next week Tuesday will be the birthday episode. So, but otherwise, that's about it for this week, guys. Thank you for listening. As always, follow me facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast. You can follow me on Twitter @RegimentalVox. And you can go to patreon.com/theRegimentalVox if you want to donate, help out with the podcast and stuff, you know, help fund it so I can get some better equipment and whatnot. So, but thank you guys for listening. I'll catch you on the next episode. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.